discretion is advised.
Good evening, everybody. It is 11 p.m. Welcome. It's Wednesday, April 1st, 2020. No April Fools. We're really having a show, and thank you for joining us for the 86th episode of the Rock and Roll Shrink Radio Show here on Blog Talk Radio. Special thanks to our host, NDB Media. I'm Casey Shapiro, and with me tonight is Dr. Stephen Mathis, a.k.a. the Rock and Roll Shrink. We'll be taking calls from our listeners all evening during the show for the next hour at 914-338-0314. You can also follow along in our live chat room as the show is happening. Before we begin, a couple quick disclaimers. This show does not constitute a doctor-client relationship, nor legal or medical representation of any kind. Also, the views expressed on this show are those of Dr. Mathis and Ms. Shapiro, and are not an official stance on behalf of the psychological community or its peer vetting or regulatory bodies. And now, a topic-relevant bit of music played by Dr. Mathis himself. Take it away, Doc. Thank you for that. And if you would please let us know the name of the song and the artist and its relevance to tonight's topic.
So that was a snippet from the title cut from the recording with the same name, The Mob Rules by Black Sabbath. That was the second release with singer Ronnie James Dio after he had replaced Ozzy after his departure from Black Sabbath. So, given that we're going to be talking about emergent scenarios and stress-related things and potential panic, I thought that was a good segue into our discussion this evening.
Thank you very much for that. As Dr. Mathis mentioned, tonight's episode is entitled Flirting with Disaster, Coping Under Crisis, with a nod to Molly Hatchet, which we'll discuss in a moment. Before we begin our topic discussion, let's first go to the Rock and Roll Shrink Recall, a moment of rock music trivia stories as recounted by Dr. Mathis, if you would, sir.
So, speaking of Sabbath, I thought since we were doing a Sabbath theme for our intro, I would do a biopic of Ronald James Parvona, which most of you know as Ronnie James Dio. So, Sabbath was not Ronnie's first outing by any means. He had actually originally born in New Hampshire, but relocated shortly after to Cortland, New York. His father was working with the military during the World War II scenario, and they relocated to Cortland, New York. Ronnie started out very young, playing trumpet. So he wasn't always a vocalist and lyricist. He started out as a trumpet player in the band. Yeah, I know. Talk about, you know, blowing his horn early. But so anyway, he was one of the youngest members in the school's official dance band. Started his training at 5. So eventually ended up in a rock and roll group called Vegas Kings, which they later renamed to Ronnie and the Rumblers and then to Ronnie and the Redcaps. And I don't know the story behind that. But he also eventually went from trumpet to bass guitar and vocals. So he was doing some trumpet, some bass guitar, and some vocals when he moved into rock, more rock-oriented stuff. Supposedly, and I haven't verified this, but supposedly was offered a scholarship to Juilliard but turned it down because he was, you know, probably interested in doing rock music and not pursuing a classical career. So he ends up, I think, at the University of Buffalo majoring in pharmacology and actually played trumpet in the university's band, but didn't last very long because he was only in college for a couple of years because he went out to play rock and roll music. And basically eventually morphed this band into when they ended up being Ronnie and the Redcaps, he ended up doing sort of this more of a rock-oriented stuff as opposed to a jazz-type thing, and eventually ended up being Ronnie Dio and the Prophets. So he changed his name and became Ronnie Dio and the Prophets, who actually had a single on Atlantic Records back in the day. As they progressed, they obtained a keyboard player and changed their name to the Electric Elves. And then a car accident happened that put most of them in the hospital, and one of them permanently retired to take a permanent missing from the band. He was killed in the car wreck, the guitar player. I think Nick Pantis was his name. And so once they came out, they basically changed their name in 72 to Elf. They just shortened it to Elf. And they became the opening act for... And they became the opening act for Deep Purple. Roger Glover, the bass player for Deep Purple at the time, sort of discovered them. So they were the opening act for Purple, and Roger Glover actually produced their records. Their first, I think they had 3 records, and Roger Glover of Deep Purple produced them. So they were the opening act on tour for Deep Purple, which is how... oh, my God, I'm having a brain fart. Ritchie Blackmore, the guitar player for Deep Purple, found out about Dio, who was at that point, you know, doing vocals predominantly. And so when he decided to part ways with Deep Purple, he and Ian Gillan, the lead singer, had a long-standing riff. And Dio said, well, you know, Blackmore met Dio, and he said he seemed like an easy guy to work with. And so he actually got some of the guys from Elf and formed Rainbow. Ritchie Blackmore's Rainbow. So a lot of those original records were done with the folks from Elf, which of course got disbanded and morphed into Ritchie Blackmore's Rainbow. Now, from that point, they had a lot of personnel changes, but Dio did several albums with Blackmore, and including some live records. And then as Blackmore wanted to go more commercial and away from sort of the fantasy rock stuff, Dio and Blackmore parted company, and then Blackmore went on to get quite a number of other vocals, including Grand Bond, who originally replaced Ronnie James Dio. And then from there, you know, he's had quite a number of other vocalists, and for a time went back with Deep Purple, had a reunion and went back with them. And, you know, so he's been back and forth, but he's the guy that also started David Coverdale's career. So, you know, he started a lot of very famous vocalists who've gone on to do really well. At any rate, when Dio left Rainbow, that was about the time that Ozzy was, you know, departed from Black Sabbath, and Tony Iommi had caught some of the act and had seen Dio and approached him about replacing Ozzy as their front man. And from that came the record Heaven and Hell, which is what, you know, brought them back into the limelight after Ozzy left, because people were going, what the hell are they going to do? And from that to the follow-up record, which was Mob Rules, which had Vinny Appice on drums, who was Carmine Appice's brother. Carmine is the longtime drummer for Cactus started out originally with Tim Bogert in Vanilla Fudge, and then when that broke up, they got Cactus together, which is considered America's version of, quote-unquote, the American Led Zeppelin. Went on to Beck, Bogert, and Appice, as in Jeff Beck, and various other incarnations. He's played with, I even hate to mention this, Rod Stewart. He's played with a lot of people. He's done a lot of gigs with a lot of folks. He's played with Ozzy. He's done all kinds of stuff. Carmine is an amazing drummer. At any rate, Vinny replaced Bill Ward in Black Sabbath for the Mob Rules. And then eventually when they did a live album, he and Dio and the band had a falling out supposedly over the mix of the vocals. And so that was the end of that. And then they went through a bunch of other vocalists. He did come back briefly in 92 to do one more record with them, the Dehumanizer record. And in the meantime, went on and did his solo career and took Vinny Appice with him as his drummer. Vivian Campbell was the guitar player, and Jimmy Bain was the bassist for the Dio band. Most of you know Vinny Campbell now, who is, you know, the other guitar player for Def Leppard, and has been since Clark passed away.
Oh.
So he's had a pretty heavy-duty history. And then, of course, he and Geezer Butler and Tony Iommi, the bassist and guitarist of Black Sabbath, formed a band, Heaven and Hell, which is named after the first record. And they didn't want to call it Sabbath, and they recruited Vinny to play drums with them, Vinny Appice. Because he was, at the time, Tony Iommi and Butler were still in Black Sabbath playing with Ozzy Osbourne, and that obviously would create a conflict. So they named the band Heaven and Hell, but it was essentially Black Sabbath with Dio. And he played with that up until his death. And they did one record, which did really, really well, and some live stuff. And but as most of you know, was diagnosed with stomach cancer and passed away. And that sort of was the end of that. He's prior to that, he's been nominated for all kind of and won all kinds of awards. Metal Guru Award in Classic Rock Magazine in 2006. Was the one of the first persons to be named Best Metal Singer and received the Golden Gods Award from Revolver Magazine in 2010. So, I mean, this guy's had an incredible history. He's also done some solo projects, you know, sung on some other people's solo projects, Roger Glover's stuff. He's done with something with Glenn Hughes and David Coverdale, both of whom were with Deep Purple singers that Richard Blackmore found. So he's done a lot of things. He was on the Hearing Aid Project, the Stars, the song Stars, to raise money for folks. So he's done all kinds of stuff in his life. He's also the guy that supposedly the person who invented the quote-unquote the metal horns that he flashed at people. That was he claimed to get that from his Italian grandmother. He's of Italian-American descent, which was a ward off of the evil eye. And if you see his sarcophagus and you see he's got two urns on either side of his sarcophagus, and on the urns on either side of his sarcophagus on his tomb, he's got the horns on either side. They're etched on the stone urns, and on the coffin it reads "Man on the Silver Mountain," which is a song he made famous with when he was with Rainbow.
Oh,
so yeah.
Okay.
Long live rock and roll, man with man on the Silver Mountain. Long live rock and roll. I mean, he's done a bunch of stuff. He's done a whole lot of stuff with the Rainbow on the Rainbow Rising record, which was one of the first records. And he's got a shoot ton of songs that you would play and go, "Oh, that's Dio." You know, I mean, he's got a very distinct, very unmistakable voice. But I don't think a lot of people put it together, because you know, when you hear Rainbow, you think of Richie Blackmore, because it's essentially his band. Dio was the driving force for the first several records and a couple of live recordings they did. So. A lot of that stuff you'll hear him singing vocal on it have become classic rock anthems in a sense. Anyway, that's the story, and I wanted to do a shout-out to Ronnie since his passing, I think, in 2010. Or maybe in 2000. I think he was diagnosed in 2009 and I think passed the following year. He had a complete loathing for physicians and medicine and never went to the doctor. And after he got diagnosed, he said, basically he made a lot of public service announcements, basically saying, don't be a dumbass, go to the doctor, don't do what I did till it's too late, which is really sad because we lost him way too young. So anyway, that's the story on Mr. Petavona, better known as Reiner James Dio.
Cool. Awesome. Thank you. All righty. That's a great story. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Okay. We will be taking calls from our listeners and questions in the online chat room through the rest of the hour, throughout the evening until around midnight. And then feel free to give us a call. The number is 914-338-0314. Operators are standing by, which pretty much means me. All right. In keeping with tonight's topic, I have a little snip that I got for you guys. Real quick, here we go. Okay, just wanted to put a little in there since we are cribbing off of Molly Hatchett's well-known song. Flirting with Disaster, Coping Under Crisis, tonight's topic, emergencies. Some are sudden, some are unexpected, some are natural disasters, some are crimes, some are illnesses or deaths. Most are a discrete event which then ends and processing and healing can start. Sometimes the healing process lasts a long time or even the rest of our lives. Some emergencies happen to individuals, some to a community or a nation. And once in a great while, as in the rare case of our current COVID-19 pandemic, they can happen to the entire world. It is this last type of emergency stress that we want to discuss tonight. We've done several shows on managing anxiety, PTSD, stress, conflict, terror management theory, building resilience, and related topics. Managing a global situation such as what we have now, with not only brand new factors full of uncertainty and changing targets, but the added cruel stress of propaganda and political wars made of the situation, both from within and country against country, can simply be too damn much for people to handle. We want to talk about what makes a situation like this unique in managing our stress and coping with emergency situations to help our listeners to better cope in these dramatic, dangerous and uncertain times. Please note that we are focusing specifically on everyday people rather than professionals, first responders, or essential personnel, at least for tonight's episode. Such persons may have additional factors or considerations specific to their situations that are less applicable to others. So typically we do four sections of a topic, and we're going to divide this up. So this will be part one of two. So tonight we will discuss an overview of coping with major disasters and emergencies, and part number two, how we learn coping skills and what they are. And then next time, which will be April 15th, we'll have part two, and we'll discuss how poor or absent coping skills harm us and others, and four, navigating emergency choices amidst uncertainty and attack. And before we get started, I'm going to check in with you, Dr. Mathis, and see if there's anything that you would like to add.
I'm good at this point. Thanks.
All righty. So I have a prologue that I want to read to you guys before we dive into the meat and potatoes part. We are here tonight to discuss coping techniques during a specific kind of emergency. The critical thing to understand is that we don't mean everyday emergencies such as a car accident, death of a family member, a bad storm where you lose power for a day or two, things like this, which, while quite serious, are operating at a much milder level than what we're discussing tonight. We also want to be certain to convey the appropriate tone and facts to help frame later commentary about denial, irresponsible invincibility behaviors, and other such crisis reactions. We're not a news show, but I want to share one vetted news story of dozens just like it to demonstrate the gravitas of the emergency with which we're coping and to better frame context when we speak of coping techniques and the necessity of certain procedures for everyone's mental health while dealing with a crisis of physical health. So this is some snips I gleaned out of the LA Times, one of the first people to cover this. This was a news article on the 29th of March. Skagit Valley Corral, which is in a little town that's an hour north of Seattle, about a month ago, had no known presumptive cases of COVID-19 and no quarantine. That was a large chunk of the eastern seaboard and the mid-Atlantic. In fact, just a week after this happened, I myself went to a funeral in West Virginia where they had the exact same thing going on. So this makes me a little nervous because they treated it the same way. And let's finish the story here with a little Paul Harvey moment. On Tuesday, March 10th, 60 completely asymptomatic choir members in that town held rehearsal as usual, save for word was starting to get around, so they're not hugging, and they're using a lot of hand sanitizer. In interviews with the Los Angeles Times, 8 people who were at that rehearsal said that nobody there was coughing or sneezing or appeared ill. They sang together in the same room for 2.5 hours and went home. 3 weeks later, of those 60, 45 are COVID-19 positive. 3 are in the hospital, and another 2 are already dead. There are many stories just like this one of show-offs and disbelievers, many of whom are now hospitalized. There's a lot of what they call influencers, people that get on YouTube or Instagram and they show off for your attention and they're supposed to influence what you think. And some of these people have done little tricks like, oh, look, I'm licking the toilet. I'm so edgy. One of those guys is in intensive care now and made a video that he's since taken down, basically crying like, I'm a giant dumbass because I made myself get COVID-19 and I thought I was so cool. There's all these stories out there. There's a lot of people who, even though these things are happening, are still like, oh, it's just like the flu. It's no big deal. I don't get it. There comes a limit with these things. There's going to be a chunk of you who never get it. We can only say so much. We're going to do the best we can. People are going to listen or they're not. But it's important that our listeners comprehend the exact type and the nature of the emergency that we are about to address. I'm going to just check in. I didn't mark that I was doing this, but just wanted to see if Dr. Mathis had any further commentary before I get started in section one.
Well, what's interesting is you probably know this, but most of our listeners probably don't. So the short version of this is about 3 weeks ago, right before this thing really got crazy, I went into the recording studio to do some new tunes that I wrote that are going to be marketed pretty soon. And there was a very well-known producer there who did the session. He was really awesome and handled it really well. And all of us, you know, are asymptomatic and, you know, were very healthy, weren't coughing, sneezing, whatever. And actually, Mr. Happy went with us and to observe and to, you know, give me immoral support. And so, yeah, it worked really well. And so we did the session, did the mix down, went back, did everything, and it really, really well. Well, the following week, he was the same engineer producer guy was doing a session for, I think, an LA group of folks from LA who had flown to record with him here in Atlanta. And when they came here, they brought him a little present. And he's now in the hospital. Yeah. Now, the good news is the rest of us are, you know, doing fine and rocking and rolling, no pun intended. But this guy's not doing that great. I mean, I don't think he's going to pass on, but he got really, really, really sick. In fact, he was supposed to come over for dinner the week after the recording he did with the folks in L.A., and I think it was in L.A., and he called me up and said, hey, you don't want me coming over. I'm starting to feel funky and yada, yada, and if I've got this thing, I don't want to give it to you. And I'm thinking, okay, well, that was nice. So, yeah. So, you know, you think you're okay, and then the proverbial feces at the rotating blades, and you're not. And this is not a guy who eats. I mean, this guy takes vitamins pretty regularly. He, you know, he eats really well. He's a healthy guy in general. So I share that not to make people paranoid, but to say that even the best of us who do all these things can sometimes get bit when we're exposed to folks who are actively virulent and contagious. And I don't know if these folks knew they were contagious at the time or not and just said screw it and came over anyway, but at any rate,
almost none of them know, because tests for if you're asymptomatic, it is close to impossible to get a test unless you have some extenuating circumstance, or, you know, you're a famous politician or something. That's one of the chief crisis issues right now, is that a lot of people would love to just go get tested. That would make this simple, because then they're like, I know for sure I don't have it, and then they can conduct themselves a certain way. But right now, so many people are not able to get a test, so they're guessing and they're praying and relying
on
the,
you know, and this guy isn't in any of the uber high risk groups. He doesn't have upper respiratory issues. He, you know, he's not a cigarette smoker. He doesn't have cancer or, you know, HIV or any of the autoimmune stuff. You know, he was probably in a room for 4 or 5 days with a bunch of people who had the virus, and they gave it to him.
Yep.
So
that's a shame. Well, you know, I hope he pulls through it. There are people who have made it. I know that you don't keep up with the news that much, but actor Tom Hanks and his wife were stuck down in Australia and New Zealand. They were working on a film and tested positive, and they got sequestered down there for a couple of weeks until they were sure it was over, and they did come out of it. They're back in L.A. now, but it was pretty scary for a little while.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, thankfully, nobody else involved with that has gotten it, and I don't think he would have gotten it either had the folks not come over and, you know, brought him some extra gifts from the West Coast. So, yeah.
Unfortunately, we have friends who have lost family members to it already.
Yeah. So, well, I hear you.
Yeah. But, you know, we're here tonight to kind of help everybody cope with the seriousness of this. I want to establish tone, because we've talked about stressors and anxiety and PTSD and all kinds of things like that before. And I just want to be super clear with you guys that are listening that this is a different animal tonight. And we're going to talk about this a little differently. It's going to be more urgent. And I want you to get why, so that hopefully it will help you to process it properly.
Yeah. I also may have a couple of pointers that folks may not be aware of that I'm going to share as we get to the coping skills portion.
Excellent. Yes. Perfect. Okay. So the first part I want to talk about, just an overview of coping with major disasters and emergencies. So there's a significant difference between the skills needed to deal with urgent or serious problems in our lives that may even be unusual, sudden, unexpected, and even life disrupting, and those skills needed to deal with the level of emergency that involves the news media, entire towns, regions, states, countries of the world, which is what we're dealing with now. You have a certain core set of skills needed for the former, including the ability to identify what's wrong and seek help to fix it. Sometimes those emergencies are no small, quiet, discreet affair. Tonight, though, what we want to discuss involves emergencies that carry every bit of the former kind, and then add the latter kind on top of it. So you may not only have mental health problems, anxiety, stress, panic, and personal upheaval, but to all these, you would then add the need for immediate actions, dropping your current life down to your job and maybe even your home, all sense of routine, stability, or resources, and most of all, a dramatic and constantly changing target that is completely out of your control, even if you do manage to figure some things out for a time. The stakes are very high. other people you don't even know could ruin things for you at the drop of a dime, you know, like your friend. You know, somebody obviously coughed on him at the wrong moment. It's chaos on limited support and resources. People you usually could count on to be there for you suddenly make excuses, fall apart, ghost you, pick fights, self-destruct, or even worse. Most responsible adults over the years have crafted for themselves at least a partial support system for emergencies. Usually. Some of you have not. Yeah. And part of this show is your wake-up call. If you haven't been, you're super late to the game, so get your ass on the field and start doing it now because we're not done being sequestered. Okay. People you can count on to drop everything and come help, come get you, watch things, bring things, take things away, protect you and yours, provide resources and helping hands. But in a community upheaval level crisis, sometimes other people are not self-aware, are not ready to respond to trauma, and fall apart when the going gets rough. Many of them don't even know this of themselves until the day it matters. So let's talk about what's at stake. Why is this such a damn big deal? It seems obvious, but if you understand what's on the line, it will help you understand why people flip out in the way that they do and to the level they do. So you have the following things potentially in danger: the comfort of certainty and routine, all your investment, planning, and history, quote, everything you've worked for, you know, access to your usual resources and power. You know, something as simple, somebody had posted a thing about, like, over in India, the ability to sequester is considered the purview of the rich. Like, most people don't live in housing where they can. Most people don't live in a place where they can be 6 feet apart for very long. So all of these things that we have, these resources to be able to do simple stuff for our own ability, all this stuff is in danger. Necessities of life: food, clothing, shelter, medical treatment, mental health treatment, social well-being, income, means to provide for yourself, transport. All of these things could be in danger. Like right now, I think almost over half the country right now is sequestered. Can't really go anywhere and get stuff. You know, and most of your neighbors have bought it. Anyway, normalcy. Our ability to function in the everyday demands a base level sense of normal from which to begin. If you're in crazy town and nothing is normal, nothing will ever be the same. We write songs about it, we make jokes about it, or we talk about it when we're grieving or when we're talking about that country over there that has war torn everything. That's us now for the moment. Personal control and agency. It's kind of hard to feel like you're in control of your own life when you're in timeout in your house and possibly for the next 3 months for some of us. Responsibilities for yourself and to others depending on you. Simple stuff like neighbor down the street's 80 years old, lives by herself, her husband's dead. You walk by and you check on her. Do you need anything? She doesn't have internet, so you can't go on Facebook and say, "Can I get you something at the store?" All of a sudden, you can't do that simple thing. You're not allowed because we're sequestered and you can't get up to the house to get her attention. All these kinds of things are all of a sudden in upheaval. And lastly, and related to all these other things, your sense of safety, security, and stability. These events can be dangerous for all of us. They are serious and relentless. Not everyone is built to be a de facto hero. Events like these often give those who get through them PTSD afterwards. These are the kinds of events you get it from. It is just imperative to truly understand that we are not talking about an anxiety attack that is soon over and dealt with. We're not talking about wrecking your car. What we're teaching our listeners tonight is how to cope with things that are in many ways not unlike being involved in war. And wars leave scars. And with that, I'm going to check in with you, Dr. Mathis, for extra comments.
No, I'm going to wait till we get to the coping skills arena.
Okay, and that's our very next section. So let's go.
Woo-hoo.
Section 2, how we learn coping skills and what they are. There probably will be more I have to say on this next week. There's so much to say on this topic that I'm actually kind of a walking example of what we're talking about. It was overwhelming to triage it all and distill it down so I could talk to you guys for just an hour. So this is what I have for you tonight, and there's more to come. And I know Dr. Mathis has additional stuff. So let's do this. Typically, coping skills and resiliency are things we learn from our parents as we grow up, along with many other basic adult behaviors such as responsibility, fairness, and other good character traits. We learn by examples from the key adults in our family, community, society, and extended tribe. And, you know, that could be like church people or, you know, aunts and uncles or the neighbor or grandparents, you know, all that kind of stuff. In the case of tonight's topic, we learn to model emergency responsibility behaviors from the responses of adults in our lives responding to crises that happen to them or the family. Being proactive, prioritizing needs, delegating, working with authority, taking orders, being reliable and responsible, emergency skills such as first aid or organizing and disseminating supplies. Resources or information. Sorry, I misunderstood my own sentence. I'm tired. Things like this. These are all skills that we use to cope in situations like that. And in a stereotypical setting, that's where we used to get those things from. Sometimes they'd be reinforced in school. I do realize that a large number of you don't get this in school or at home, but we'll talk about that in section 3. So, general coping skills for crises and emergencies. This is me distilling down several articles that said kind of the same things over and over again. So, I've kind of summarized them all into categories. So, the first one is your body. Take care of your body and its needs. I know it sounds like t-shirt wisdom. It should be a little hippy-dippy button that you wear, but it's true. Food, hydration, sleep, moving around. If you can't exercise, just walk to the mailbox, whatever. Medical needs. If any of these areas are lacking more than briefly or infrequently, it will cause you to be less able to make good decisions under pressure, as well as lead to additional symptoms or situations that will then need handling on top of the current emergency. Breaks. You must take breaks, especially in an extended emergency crisis like COVID-19 pandemic, where no end date is obvious or guessable. Some of us are in quarantine until late April, May, June. Virginia's is June 10th. I don't know about Georgia. A lot of the Eastern Seaboard is definitely at least the next 2 or 3 months. It is much like living through a natural disaster or even a war in this way. You need breaks from duties and other stressors. You need breaks from the news. You need breaks from worrying. You need breaks from one another. Sometimes you can't always do this when you most need it. So be alert and ready to do it as a fair opportunity comes up. I mean, don't leave somebody in some kind of lurch because I have to have a break right this hot second, but definitely make a point to take your breaks and don't feel bad for it. Don't apologize for it. This is maintenance for you that you need. Number 3, help, giving and receiving. In a true emergency, we must all know ourselves and be honest about our capabilities and limitations. We need to put away pride and even some social dislike, and do the humane and decent things for one another and those nearby. We must ask for help when needed and not wait until we are in further unnecessary emergency from having piddled around and asking, such as lack of critical supplies or addressing a medical need. When others need help, offer it or facilitate it. Don't be petty or use it to dig at people for non-emergency slights. You know, I don't like that guy, so F him, I'm not getting his meds. Don't do that shit. No room for that here. Information and news. responsibly choose from where you want to get updates on your situation during your emergency. You want to be well informed, but also balance that with being correctly informed, as well as not burned out from hysteria, social media laziness, and propaganda. If you're really bad at this, most of you are online in social media somewhere, and you have that friend who reads all the damn news articles. I'm that friend for a lot of people. You have that friend who reads all this stuff. Ask them to send you the stuff that is heavily vetted or short and sweet. You know, like, this is from the WHO or CDC. Here's a giant list of what to do. It's official. Just send that part. You know, there's lots of things you can do, but you need to get information, but don't drown in it. People, connections, family, relationships, tribe. Maintain, create, or reawaken connections to family, neighbors, good friends, people for whom you are a mutual support system, literally and emotionally. Hopefully, these were things you were already doing, but if these relationships have languished, you're going to require a support system from somebody if an emergency hits. No solitary person is equipped to manage all possible emergency scenarios alone in a vacuum. Routines. Establishing a sort of routine or schedule while confined at home, even if you're still working, is a good way to keep at least a veneer of normalcy on everyday life. Just understand that this routine, too, has the potential to suddenly change, and be sure not to be an overachiever about it. That's something we'll talk about again in 2 weeks later on, is people kind of making it a contest. There's no need for that. Okay, the next thing I want to talk about, these are a couple of articles that had some lists for you guys. Some of these things are repeats, but I didn't want to sit and try to edit it all out, so I'm just going to read them over and just ignore the repeats if you've already heard it. So this first one is Taking Care of Your Mental Health in the Face of Uncertainty by Dr. Doreen Marshall, who is AFSP Vice President of Programs at the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. So she's coming at it from that angle, and that is a real worry here. There are actually people there were healthcare professionals in Italy who felt guilty that they may have contributed to the spread because of lack of protective gear, you know, whatever. They didn't have the crap they needed to keep everybody safe, and they felt like it was personal, and a couple of them have taken their lives. So this is really a problem. So Dr. Marshall says, it's important to note that we are not helpless in light of current news events. We can always choose our response. If you are struggling, here are some things that you can do to take care of your mental health in the face of uncertainty. Separate what is in your control from what is not. Do what helps you feel a sense of safety. Don't compare your needs and responses to everyone else's or to media stories. Get outside in nature, even if you are avoiding crowds. And yes, there are ways to do this even under lockdown. Challenge yourself to stay in the present. Don't obsess on what's coming. Don't obsess on what you might have already screwed up. Be here now. Stay connected and reach out if you need more support. I cannot say this enough. A lot of people are not doing that, and they are putting themselves in danger. The next article with the list is Managing Coronavirus Anxiety, 10 Tips from a Professional Psychologist by NickWignall.com. It's WIGNALL.com. This was written on March 15th. Again, some of these are repeats, but several are not. So these are his suggestions to manage your anxiety with all this crap going on. And it's interesting, in the beginning, when he doesn't have repeats, it's primarily about allowing yourself permission to be anxious and worried about it, because the fighting of it just makes it worse. That's his come from on this. So number one, validate your fears and worries first. Number two, distinguish worry from problem solving. Don't conflate them. Number three, schedule a time to worry on purpose. And he had a long paragraph about what that means. Like, at 5 o'clock today, I'm going to spend 20 minutes fretting about stuff. And you can write it down, what you're fretting about, and you have permission to worry about all the things. And write them down, and then put it away, and then come back at 5 o'clock tomorrow and deal with it. Number four, if you're feeling helpless, be helpful. I know this doesn't work for everybody, but I'm somebody it does work for, so it does help some people. A lot of times when you feel like you can't control your life and you can't make progress, you can find it very soothing to be in service to others, especially if it's a way that is fairly easy for you but not for them. And it gives you the immediate satisfaction of having done something useful. Number five, we're starting to get into the repeats. Move, move, move. And he means, you know, go exercise or just get some movement in. Number six, be intentional about your media consumption. Number seven, call up good friends. Number eight, tighten up your sleep routines. Number nine, pick up that old hobby. And that, you know, all the little things around the house that you haven't been doing because you didn't have time. Got some time now. Try them out. And number 10, if 1 through 9 are not helping, see a professional. And then the next part that I want to talk about is what is considered normal in handling an extended crisis. And this is the part where I may have more to say to you guys next time, but I have pulled out notes on anxiety and stress, and they are not exactly the same thing. They're a little different from each other. So this first thing is about anxiety, and this is extended anxiety. Sometimes people have anxiety over a job interview or a date or something with a, you know, a finite calendar. But a situation like what we have now, the majority of people that have not passed away that are still with us don't have a memory of a major event like this that's been going on and we didn't know when it would end. Like, for example, World War II or something. Or even, well, Vietnam, there are people still alive, but not as many. So when I say extended anxiety, it's not typical clinical anxiety. It's a long-term kind of thing, a kind of anxiety from events that have the potential to flip into PTSD if you're not careful. So the source for this is sciencenewsforstudents.org. A lot of the take of the article was trying to assist parents dealing with children who are at home and not coping with what's going on. So here's the snip. Quote, anxiety is normal and helpful, says Amy Lee, psychologist at the Center for Pediatric Behavioral Health at the Cleveland Clinic in Ohio. It's okay to feel more anxious about this. It's something we should be more alert about, more aware, more careful, and more thoughtful. In fact, she says, letting ourselves stay a little uncomfortable can be a positive way to cope with uncertainty. Concerns and anxiety can sometimes tip into the unhelpful range, however, when your mind exaggerates a threat, explains Lee. Signs that your worry may be the unhelpful sort include not being able to, quote, turn the worries off, says Stephen Whiteside. He's a psychologist who specializes in treating childhood anxiety at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. He also says you can use these following tips from psychologists to prevent or calm down too much anxiety. Allow yourself to smile, especially using appropriate humor. And appropriate is subjective. I have some friends who cope by dealing with really dark gallows humor about this. Just know your audience. You know, say that in front of friends who are cool with it. Focus on the positive. Prioritize those things that which uplift you. In other words, you don't have to be all, yay, smile, look, everybody's got a disease. That's not what it means. But don't obsess on the things that drag you down. If you're going to focus your energy on something, focus it on a thing that's going to make you feel better. Maintain a routine at home. Include breaks, lunches, and interaction, just like you would if you were going to school or to work. Limit media and be honest regarding your own tolerance and limits. For example, I know Dr. Mathis doesn't get involved in too much news media.
That's an understatement.
Yes, and you have to know what's good for you. Some people can drink a lot of it. That's me. And I understand that I am a filter for a large number of people, including him, for that exact reason, because they know what they can put up with, and I know what's stupid crap, and I'll filter all that out and just tell them the other parts. That was the wrong sentence. Enjoy your friends. Don't limit your friends. Not now. Enjoy your friends and extended family just virtually. Think about what sharing you enjoy. Likely so will they. And by this, I mean, like, some people, when they do social media, I know I'm talking French in front of Dr. Mathis, but some people like to look at pictures of your day. And I know it's weird, and some people who didn't grow up with this don't really understand the phenomenon. It's kind of psychologically new, but since we're not physically around each other the way that friendships used to be, I didn't see what you had for breakfast because we didn't eat together. Or I haven't seen your grandkids in 3 years. Or look, that cute thing your pet did. Isn't that kind of cool? It sounds dorky, but a lot of people really sort of enjoy that and find it calming. It's like they're being part of your day. It's a virtual representation of what we physically used to do with each other when we all lived together and had the same schedules, which people don't do these days. So if you're into that stuff, think about virtually sharing that with other people. That bonding can help you feel better. People find that calming. Next one is get active outside if at all safely possible. I know, for example, people in apartment buildings or gated communities have a little trouble with this, not running into other people. I get that. So, yeah, you have to field your own area on that one. Dance and gardening are good close-to-home ideas to do that. Reinforce good hygiene with family members, and that does not mean, Jesus Christ, Dad, wash your socks. It's not grooming. But rigorous hand washing, touching handles of things, touching the mail that comes to your door, touching the car if you have to go out. Just reinforce that everyone's on the same page about, you know, don't touch your face at certain times if you have to go out. If you're able to use masks and gloves, that's great. A lot of people are not because they're starting to donate them to medical professionals because they're grossly undersupplied. But just be on the same page with your safety behaviors around the house and if you must go out so that nobody blows it. You know, oh, look, Susie's picking her nose and touching the car. You got to watch those things. And accept that conditions may change rapidly, so don't waste time and well-being fighting it. Teach yourself to be okay with it. And that is the end of the feedback on anxiety. And then stress is a little bit different. And this is a compilation of different articles, and these are signs that you are stressed or even potentially depressed in a crisis. So if these things are suddenly going on with you, a lot of times people don't know that they're doing it. They don't catch it. But, like, if all of a sudden your friends or your family are saying, God, you're doing a lot of blah, 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 you need to get yourself reoriented. You may have a problem with stress in this and you're not coping. You're not processing your stuff. You're not using your resources. You're not decompressing. And if you let that crap go long enough, it has consequences. So watch out for these behaviors in yourself, in other people. If they don't seem to know they're doing it, gently, as politely as you can manage, let them know if they're open to feedback about it. So here's the list. Anger or short temper, and this is all one big concept. Curt, snippy, sarcastic responses, projecting, blaming, picking fights, especially with friends, people you normally like and get along with. I cannot tell you, there are already somewhere between 5 to 10 friends that I thought I was very good friends with that we are no longer speaking because of acting out. So census started in the last 3 months. Difficulty concentrating, focusing, completing tasks, like distinct executive dysfunction going on. If you normally have this, like if you have ADHD or something else, this may not be as much of a tell. But if you're starting to act like you have ADHD and you know you don't, you may be having a stress problem. Feelings of numbness, disbelief, anxiety, or fear. This is always one of the classics when you're stressed or getting into depression. Being impatient, in a hurry for no reason. You know, I know that we're all not supposed to be out running around, so if you manage to go somewhere and have them make takeout food for you, don't scream at them if it's not ready right away. Be grateful that they can do it at all, because there are actually some areas where that's banned. Mania or cabin fever. There are some people who are violating curfews because they just can't stand it anymore, and they have just decided, you know, fuck the restrictions, I'm just crazy, I'm going to go do the thing. And the problem is doing the thing might make somebody very sick. Self-medicating. Increased use of alcohol, tobacco, or other drugs, from caffeine to over-the-counter stuff to scripts to illegals. Just if you realize all of a sudden you're relying on these more and more than normal, and especially towards the end, if you're getting into your prescriptions or illegal drugs to cope with this, that's a stress problem. If your sleep is bad, difficulty sleeping, nightmares, upsetting thoughts and images, that sort of stuff. Sleep hygiene is crucial in this because we have to function. We have to make a lot of really big decisions on the fly. And if you don't sleep, your brain does a lot of really dumb shit that might hurt you. Stress eating, especially sugar and other carbs, changes in appetite, energy, and activity levels. Some people don't eat. That could be stress. Some people are eating all the things. Next thing you know, you wake up and you have a box of Girl Scout cookies on your breath. You know, you have to know what your stress behavior is. But if you're doing something like that, you might have a problem. Symptoms with no, quote, cause. Physical reactions such as headaches, body pains, stomach problems, and skin rashes that don't seem to have a reason for it, that's not tied to something. Worsening of chronic health problems with no obvious other cause, immune system failure. Also, withdrawal and loss of ability to deal with people outside your personal norm. Some people are introverts, so you have to decide what's normal for you. And then there's that line. And if you're dealing with people even less than that, for some people that may be barely at all. But during something like this, no man can be an island and survive, I guess I want to say. So don't be too introverted because it might cut out your help and resources and stuff. So with that, I'm going to check in with Dr. Mathis and see what he would like to add, because I know it is a lot. Please feel free.
Thanks. So first thing I would say is I was reading in a very well-respected refereed medical journal, and I can't remember if it was JAMA or New England Journal of Medicine, but it was one of the biggies. And basically they said that if during this kind of thing, you should be doing 3 to 5 grams of C minimum a day, vitamin C. And pure source is not that crap you get at some of the vitamin stores, but the real deal stuff. That's a prophylaxis against some of the stuff and will also boost your immune system.
I know you mentioned that personally, and I was not clear what a good source for the proper vitamin C was, because most of our usuals are the icky ones.
Yeah.
Where would one get
so
it?
So there's pure sources you can get. So if you're getting it from things like certain fruits and veggies, that's fine, but you're not going to get that many C's. Get your vitamins, nutrients, supplements from a refereed nutritional company like Numedica, like Metagenics, not over-the-counter stuff that's at, you know, most of your grocery stores and some of your
Not like Walmart or GNC or that.
Yeah. Don't get it from, no offense to Sam's Club or any of the BJ's or Costco or any of those places, but just don't get vitamins from there. Get, you know, if you're going to get over the counter, you know, if you have access to prescription, quote unquote, prescription vitamins, prescription foods from your naturopath or dietitian or nutritionist or holistic practitioner, do so. There are some pretty reputable over the counter people, Barleans, for example, which has been around forever and a day. So there's lots of reputable vitamin companies. You just don't get the crappy ones. So that's one thing. The other thing I will tell you is that if you're having trouble with this stuff and you do need to see a professional, a lot of us are doing telehealth stuff over the internet with secure platforms like Cisco WebEx, for example. There's a bunch of them. And recently, the states and federal government have loosened the reins, so to speak, so that you can do across state lines in a lot of states and not get accused of practicing without a license because of this coronavirus stuff. So a lot of folks are going to the telemental health stuff and the telebehavioral health stuff, which, as you know, I've been doing for 10 years now. Although most of my patients are still coming in to see me face-to-face, I haven't seen any change in my immediate population. But it wouldn't surprise me if that started increasing. So, you know, if you feel like you need help and you're afraid to get out, you can always do the telemental health thing, and particularly if you have a relationship with a competent clinician who's been trained how to use that, because there is a little bit of a learning curve. But most competent clinicians can, you know, get up to snuff without a whole lot of, falderol. You definitely want to make sure that your immune system is in good shape. So anything you can do, ergo the vitamin C, but anything you can do to boost your immune system, if you already have a compromised immune system, you may want to do some echinacea and golden seal, and again, get the most pure forms of those as you can. Those are not things you want to take on a regular basis, my understanding is, with those, but it's something you can take for short periods of time, which help boost you, particularly if you have an autoimmune disease or if you're, you know, fighting, you know, diabetes or cancer or some upper respiratory problem, which makes this coronavirus much more easily entreed into your body. You just want to be smart about it. That's all. If you're going to work with professionals, one thing I always tell people to do is to work on mindfulness training and stress management, anxiety management, because probably some of our listeners do too, anxiety and depression both deplete the body. They suppress the production of helper T cells, which are immune system fighters in our body. So if you're worn in too much and not eating properly and not getting supplements and not managing your mental health, your immune system's going to go down, which is going to make you more susceptible to this. So, in the words of one of my heroes, you have to be very, very careful. You're hunting immune systems. don't put your immune system at risk. And part of that's getting sleep and not eating crap food, particularly, as you mentioned earlier, any simple carbohydrate, which turns to sugar in your body, which does crappy stuff to your glycemic level and your blood pressure. And you need a regulated hormonal system and a regulated body chemistry as much as possible. Doing extra vitamin B complex, again, from a reputable source, because part of vitamin B's duty, if you will, they're touted. You'll see them sometimes touted in some of the more popular places as quote unquote stress tabs. So part of what their function is to make food more bioavailable. Aha. Uh-huh. And they also act like a bus, so they schlep the vitamins to their places quicker. D3 also, if you're doing a D3 supplement, again, from a reputable source, if you're doing the D3, you might want to do a D3 that also has potassium K in it, which is kind of a brain calmer, even a router. I know that's not a word. And if you're going to do that, use the liquid form either sublingually under your tongue or drop it in a liquid and take it, and that way it bypasses your liver and first pass effect and all that kind of stuff, so you're getting much more of the nutrition directly into your brain much quicker. So that sort of thing is going to be really important. want to eat foods that have serotonin in them, particularly if you have a predilection for depression. And there's a shoot ton of foods that have that cause the brain to produce serotonin that you can eat. I don't have the full list of them in front of me, but I have a list of them if folks want it. And you want me to send you a copy, you can post it if you want. So there's all kinds of...
If you send me a copy, I'll put it on the Facebook page
okay.
for our listeners.
Yeah. So there's all kinds of things you can do to kind of boost your immune system. The sleep thing is definitely a big deal because sleep deprivation does very bad things to the body. Mm-hmm. Including the brain. Yeah, it's not
I'm
a good
proof.
Thing. Yeah, it is not a good thing at all. And as you know, I have this crazy sleep cycle, although I do get normal sleep. I just go to bed a whole lot later and get up a whole lot later than most people. But, yeah sleep deprivation is not a good thing at all. And one thing I would tell people is, if you can limit your exposure to media, get your media from very reliable sources and don't overload on it because you can scare the bejesus out of yourself with this stuff in a heartbeat. Get it from a reliable source, get what you need and get in and get out. Don't sit there and ruminate over it. I mean, I've got friends who just, that's all they do all day is watch this stuff and freak themselves out. I'm like, okay, and this is helping your body. How? So don't be a dummy. Don't do that. Get reputable sources, get what you need. Don't be me, which is an isolationist. That's not a smart idea either. I'm being a dummy with that. But you definitely don't want to scare the crap out of yourself. Stress, anxiety, and depression are very bad on the body. Not only on the mind, but on the body. And it'll cause your body to do bad things, cause your brain to do bad things. And it's just, they're bad, okay? So you don't want to do those.
Stress is bad, okay?
That's right. And definitely don't want to be using chemicals to some sort of better living through chemistry, using pharmacological dealies. This is like a bad idea. So unless the pharmacological dealies are naturopathic substances, you don't want to be ingesting illicit substances or abusing prescription meds. So those are some of the things that you can do to help yourself out. And like as I said, if folks are too afraid to get out to see somebody, they can always contact a mental health professional over the net. So a lot of us are doing telemental health. So find somebody who you trust that does a good job and keep in touch with them.
Excellent. Yes. Okay. Thank you for that. And as I predicted, we are now past the top of the hour, so I was wise to cut this off in the middle. And so this will temporarily conclude our show on coping under crisis. And we hope our listeners will know about and understand better how to manage not only their stress, but emergency needs, self-care, household responsibilities, and other triage under an unusually widespread emergency. And we are going to help you guys out with that again in 2 weeks. I'm going to check in with you, Dr. Mathis, and see if there's anything final that you would like to add in closing.
No, I think I'm good. Thank you.
All right. So on behalf of myself, Dr. Mathis, and NDB Media, we want to thank our listeners this evening and give our appreciation to those of you who might be joining us later via podcast, iTunes, et cetera. So we'll see you guys in 2 weeks. With a new topic that I can already tell you is part two of this. And we'll talk about that on Wednesday, April 15th, 11 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on blogtalkradio.com. We also like to give a shout out to other NDB Media shows that are coming up in the next couple of weeks. So tomorrow night, Thursday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, is Travel Itch Radio. Come north with Travel Itch Radio, where we spotlight the pristine Pybus Point Lounge on Alaska's Admiralty Island. Join Daryl Bosshart as he tells Dan Schlossberg and co-host Keita Roberts about his plush, all-inclusive resort where fishing, boating, and nature photography are king, but gourmet food, Wi-Fi, and 21st century comfort are not forgotten. Saturday morning, Sports Talk with the Guys, Saturday morning extravaganza, 4/4/2020, 9 a.m. Eastern Time. Oh my God, past the coffee o'clock on Pacific Time. Roger Noriega and the Monday Morning Quarterbacks are live on Saturday morning, and no one is safe. All the other yelling that he does, I'm not going to read you guys that. I do that every time we talk about it. So zombie apocalypse, brain cells, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, Saturday morning, the guys are going to talk. So be prepared to call in and let them know who you are if you want to call in. On Sunday night, Walking Dead online viewing party, April 5th, 8:30 p.m. It will be the temporary season 10 finale due to a work stoppage related to the COVID-19 quarantine. They were unable to get staff to edit the actual finale of the series for season 10. So season 10, episode 15, The Tower, and episode 16, A Certain Doom, will air later in the summer, and as well as the new third Walking Dead series, World Beyond. I'll let you guys know when that happens. So please look for us on Facebook, on Twitter, on iTunes, and at www.rockandrollshrank.com. Good night, everybody. Thanks for joining us, and rock on. Stay safe.